A guy that it can style and profile like nobody else. He is Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio. Adam, thank you for the time as always. How are you?
I'm doing well. Your check's in the mail for these good segues that you've got for my segment.
I'll have to add those babies up. Hopefully I get a few more coming my way, but lots to catch up on today. I mean, we heard Dan Beyer with Fox Sports give us an update on what's happening with the PGA Championship this week at TPC Harding Park over in San Francisco. You wrote an article a couple of days ago detailing some of the long shots that you like this weekend, and even though a few have already teed off and some guys like Brooks Koepka are actually wrapping up, Koepka, of course, going for a third straight PGA Championship title. Who are some of the long shots that you still kind of like for this weekend?
Yeah, one of the long shots I liked a little bit was Scottie Scheffler at 80-1, and he's one shot back. He's in the group of guys that finished up 4-under here today. I'll tell you what, this thing looks more like the Open Championship across the pond. I mean, the flags are just violently swaying in the breeze. The rough is thick, but the greens are pretty receptive here. So, you know, guys that are able to put it in the fairway off the tee, they're having some pretty easy putts once they get up to the putting surface. So we'll see what happens here as we go forward. But Scheffler was a guy that I liked. Xander Schauffele, he was about 20-1. He wasn't really a long shot, but he's also in there at 4-under here today. Daniel Berger was another guy that I know a lot of people liked. I liked him at 40-1. He's two shots back, but still a lot of guys left to tee off here this afternoon. So we'll see if anybody can run Jason Day down.
I'm going to throw three names at you. And we had this discussion yesterday with Guy Cipriano, the editor at Golf Course Industry Magazine. Koepka, McIlroy, Justin Thomas, or the field? I'll throw that same question at you. You like any one of those three or the field?
I mean, I think, you know, you mentioned Koepka and how Koepka's going for his third straight. I mean, if I had to put money on any of those three guys here this week, it would have been Koepka. Justin Thomas coming off of a win, that's kind of a difficult spot to be in. Usually you don't see guys win back-to-back weekends. And Rory, I don't know what's up with Rory. You know, before the shutdown, I mean, he was racking up top fives like crazy. Now he's kind of had some tough weekend rounds. He's even par through 16 holes today, so he's pretty far off the pace at this point in time. But that being said, you know, I think when all is said and done, with the way that this golf course is playing, a star player is going to win this thing. So I don't know if it'll be one of the three. I'd probably take the field on that bet, you know, because I like guys like Schauffele and I like guys like Berger. But you know, obviously, you know, those are three guys that can win no matter what week it is.
Going to be a lot of fun to follow this tournament, and it's also at a public course, too, which I thought was kind of neat. So a lot of really cool stories heading into the PGA Championship, which, again, is wrapping up for some and has wrapped up for some already on day one today. Switching gears now and taking a look at the Major League Baseball slate for tonight. Blue Jays against the Braves. You like the under here. Why is that?
Yeah, you know, when you look at Toronto, I mean, they're very dependent on right-handed power. They've got a lot of really good young hitters. Most of them are right-handed. Kevin Biggio is the only guy who's actually left-handed out of that core group of guys. So you got Tuki Toussaint on the mound tonight for the Braves, and he's a guy that fares very well against right-handed batters. He's got some control issues, mostly against lefties. I think he should be pretty good against this right-handed heavy lineup tonight. And Nate Pearson goes for Toronto, and one of the things I talked about today on my MLB podcast, The Bettor's Box, is that on pitches of 95-plus miles per hour this year, hitters are only batting .236 with a .309 weighted on-base average, which is a lot like on-base percentage, just a little bit more advanced of a statistic. Last year on pitches of 95-plus, hitters batted .249 with a .322 weighted on-base average. So this year, I don't know if it's the ball, and I don't know if it's hitters getting ready for the season, but premium premier velocity has fared better this year than it did last year, and Pearson for Toronto absolutely has that. And also the Braves are going through a lot right now. You know, they've had Freddie Freeman had COVID coming into the year. Ozzie Albies is out now. They lost Mike Soroka earlier in the week. They got a lot of adversity that they're kind of playing through right now. Maybe Pearson can take advantage of that.
Well, I'm very much having my eye on that game tonight. Nate Pearson is somebody that, he throws absolute gas, and I think he can become one of the better pitchers in the major leagues in the coming years if he progresses in the right way. Another game here in the MLB slate, Cubs-Royals. Interesting one here. You took the Cubs' first five-inning run line. Explain that.
Yeah, so the first five-run line basically means that the Cubs will need to be winning at the end of the first five innings. The run line means it's minus half a run, so they have to be winning. Whereas if I just took the Cubs for the first five and they were tied, it would be a push. It would be no action. But they actually have to have the lead after five innings here in this one. And Tyler Chatwood's on the mound for the Cubs. And one of the big problems for Tyler Chatwood here over the last couple of years has been a high walk rate. Well, the Royals are walking about 4.2% of the time in their plate appearances this year, which is far and away the lowest in the league. So that takes away the biggest problem for Chatwood, which is, you know, throwing strikes. Otherwise, he's got 19 strikeouts this year. He's increased the usage of his cutter. 9 strikeouts have come off of that. He's kind of changed his arsenal around a little bit to the point where he's trying to get guys to kind of chase a little bit more. And to this point, they've done that. So I think Chatwood's in a good spot here today. And for the Royals, they're sending out Brad Keller, who's a pitch-to-contact kind of guy, sort of a ground ball type of guy. But he had COVID during summer camp, so this is his first start of the 2020 season. I'd be surprised if he's pretty sharp here against the good Cubs lineup.
We are being joined on the hotline by Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM. All right, you decided to take a pass on the Indians and Reds tonight. Castillo and Carrasco, the pitching matchup for this one. What scares you about this game?
Yeah, great pitching matchup tonight. One of the lowest totals on the board at 7, 7.5. And the reason for that is obviously because the Indians are not hitting. And, you know, if you're not doing much offensively, Luis Castillo is not the kind of guy you want to face. Heavy ground ball percentage, high strikeout rate, the kind of guy where you don't get a whole lot of opportunities against him. And the Indians aren't creating enough opportunities of their own to begin with. They got very lucky to score 2 runs last night. We all know the weaknesses of this offense here so far. I do like Carlos Carrasco against the Reds offense that has struggled in a lot of ways similar to what the Indians have done. But Carrasco allows a little bit too much hard contact for me. So I think that the Reds probably wind up hitting a few balls harder than the Indians do. There's a very high correlation between quality contact and winning the game. So I decided to stay off of this one. But it'd be real nice to see the Indians offense show a pulse here tonight, that's for sure.
Yeah, anything. Absolutely anything. And to get any kind of production whatsoever from that outfield will be really nice. I mean, when they traded for Delino DeShields Jr., I don't think they were necessarily trading with hopes that his bat would carry them, but he can't be a whole lot worse than the rest of that batch. I mean, Jim Ingram with the Chronicle-Telegram wrote an article today discussing how 6 of the 7 outfielders entering play yesterday, hitting just a .179 or worse, the one outlier in that group Bradley Zimmer. I almost called him Grady Sizemore because there are a lot of similarities between those two, but Bradley Zimmer was the one outlier, which is really interesting. So 179 or worse. I think that just tells you all you need to know about just how rough it has been to watch that outfield with the sticks this season.
And the amazing thing too, Andy, is that the last 2 days, they've faced a couple of right-handers that have big platoon split issues. Tyler Mayo and then TJ Antone yesterday, two guys that traditionally fare a lot better against right-handed hitters, give up a lot of offense to left-handed batters. Indians, with all of their switch hitters and their platoon guys and all that, they still couldn't do anything the last 2 days off of those guys. So that's a major red flag for me, that their approach is just all out of sorts right now.
Yeah, and you can tell. I mean, actually, you watch Franmil Reyes, and he just looks confused. Now, thankfully, he guessed right on that 95-mile-an-hour fastball late in the game a couple of nights ago and at a 2-run shot. But, boy, he certainly looks a little confused at the dish for sure, and he's not alone. All right, Adam, we'll shift our attention now to the ice. Toronto is favored over the Blue Jackets this evening. However, you like the Blue Jackets as the dogs in this one tonight. What is it about the Blue Jackets that you like?
Yeah, you know, when you look at game one for Columbus, I mean, they played great. You know, they had good pace, they had good speed, they had their legs under them. They looked completely different in game two. And John Tortorella was very critical of his team's effort in that game where, I mean, Toronto dominated the play. And Jonas Korpisalo really kept Columbus in that game in the first period and through half of the second period before Toronto finally got on the board. Korpisalo was a worry coming into this playoff series. You didn't really know what you were going to get from him. The fact that he has played well gives me hope that Columbus, if they get their legs going here tonight, should have a better shot in this game. Do I think they win the game? I don't know, but I think there's value on taking them as a plus 135 underdog tonight. And also, too, one of the things that people don't really think about when it comes to the NHL is that the home team gets the last change. And even though they're playing in the bubble in Toronto tonight, Columbus is the home team. They get the last line change. They get the matchups that they want against Toronto's top line with Austin Matthews and with Jake Muzzin on the lineup for the Maple Leafs. They'll get a good matchup against whoever his replacement is. I think those are two things that Columbus can take advantage of tonight. The goaltending has been very, very solid, has kept them in the games, maybe even won them game one. I think Columbus is a very live dog tonight. Again, I don't know if they win, but I think the value is on them to take a shot at plus 135.
Big one tonight for sure, no question about that, between Toronto and Columbus. Looking forward to the end result of that one later on this evening. Adam, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for stopping by. We always enjoy the insight, and we look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Have a good one.
Thanks, Adam. You do the same. Again, that's Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.